was authorized to online small group work. Marv has a wealth of experience from business and group work. We welcome this pioneering team, Group Relations Online Work.
Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you.
Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
It is our intent to bring into this space some other voices. All of us have considerable experience with group relations in various settings and various populations, and we hear this morning the emphasis on diversity. We want to bring in some new voices, the voice of psychology, the voice of measurement, the voice of technology, the voice of looking at cyberspace in our times and our explorations into it. Our presentation will provide a review of the design, implementation, and learning garnered from four small group online training events, pre-conference staff work for several of these conferences, one online group relations conference, and two international large group training events, and research conducted on several of these, some that's ongoing currently. We believe that group relations work, when adjusted, adapted for use in the online environment, provides learning opportunities that have significant similarities with, but also vary in major ways from the experiences of face-to-face learning environments. Our understanding of group and organizational dynamics in cyberspace is in its infancy. And while we are, and Jeffrey is really the leader of group relations, and we as a team represent the most experienced group relations online work, perhaps in our times, many other people, there's many other voices, there's cyberspace psychology, there's cyberspace technology, there are various governments that are very deeply involved, related inquiry, communication, in the new cyberspace environment. And there's a lot coming out now, a lot of things that we'll talk about in the literature. But for our purposes, as group relations teachers, educators, the virtual medium of cyberspace transactions needs to be studied. It will be used, it's inevitable, it is used, and so we are deeply committed to the exploration and understanding that this exploration is vital and is of great importance in our times. One area of cybersecurity that I have to be involved in through the federal government is getting a tremendously high priority, and there's great money involved. If you follow any of the federal literature, you'll see that Homeland Security is investing vast amounts of money. We can talk about that when we get a discussion. New areas of mandate and authorization for work that we're looking to find mandate and authorization for, as we hear throughout the conference, who's authorized, who's interested. In our times, there will be and there is big interest and big money available for studying the subtleties of communication online. And one of the presentations I did just a week ago was on medical records. Just a side application. In medical records in our time, where we're looking at information from around the world, for military, for government, for human service organizations, it's available. It's apparent to those of us who know that the ebbs and flows of contagion are not confined solely to the unconscious of human communication by other medium, but there's in text, in cyberspace, there are ebbs and flows of contagion that need to be known, studied, and examined. And we think that our group relations work.
Excuse me, John, I'm really straining to understand you. Could you use the microphone, please?
I could if it were working.
Oh, okay.
What we'll do is I'll project a little better.
Thank you.
So in our times, there is authorization and there is mandate that is yet to be fully harnessed, but is starting to be harnessed for the kind of work that group relations stands for online. So many would argue that the current technology advances rank alongside the Renaissance and the Industrial Revolution in terms of challenges they pose to business in a world where history seems to be accelerating and time compressed. The Tavistock's model has its distinctive emphasis on subjectivity and social systems and learning through direct experience calls for new models of learning and research, and we believe you'll see as we proceed that this is in that direction. So some of our early experiences provided the following major points of learning. Many United States and international colleagues, as well as Homeland Security related agencies, are interested in the phenomenon of group process in cyberspace and are interested. Colleagues are interested in staff roles, membership, and professional inquiry into this area. The observable behavior in this environment includes whether a member posts comment, when the comment is posted, the content and sequence of comments, the consultant's content and the sequence of comments, as well as slips of keyboard, unconscious contagion. Consulting to such asynchronous group process entails responding to members' comments as if these comments were being made at the same time as they are being posted by the consultant. Through the day, the consultant may be checking for new messages once or twice or several times during the day. So you get the idea of asynchronous. People come in and go out at different times. The consultant trusts that the timing of a consultation can be discerned by referring to the consultant's internal experience rather than to a temporally defined experience such as we have in face-to-face conference work. The transcript of the conference provides a ready record for all involved of all written interchange, and this provides ready and exacting detail of written process. At any time, people who are involved in the online can review the text and the history of what's been said. This may have more potential to threaten anonymity than usual terms. The length of time available for responses by members and consultants provides opportunity for extensive thought and rehearsal, study of transcript patterns, access to external reference material. People can bring in pictures, reference, poetry, and they do. They can rehearse, they can think, they can synthesize, they can even review past contributions and bring them in and offer them up as material. Very different. And conference work when we rely on memory. There is more possibility of altered states of mind by members, which could include substance use or lurking behavior. The time variable, as well as the lack of face-to-face contact, could allow for amplified states of work or regression, which may exceed our customary modes of understanding. There may be alteration on what we consider to be typical regressive processes or work processes, which you'll hear about. Technical difficulty working in the online environment may be available as data for interpsychic, interpersonal, or system as a whole communication. With that introduction, we're going to now review with you our experience with online small group that we've conducted. We're going to discuss a PowerPoint. Lynn and I will discuss the PowerPoint. Paul and Laura, who have been this year's trainees in our small group online experience, will talk about their experience and their response to the data that we have. Jeffrey and Mark will then respond as the first to have ever led a small group online training. Jeffrey will then speak about his view as the leader of online international conference and large group events. Then we will review with you what we do, some question and answer and discussion. All of you. Sally Ford. Next, please. Thank you. So, cyberspace pioneers. First center to sponsor online training. 5 years, team of co-consultants. This is the first year that Cisco Accuray consultants and training that we've had a male and a female. Last year was the first year we had an Accuray training, which was our member, but not last year, 2 years ago. This year we have team. the third year that we've had a female consultant. The first being Jeffrey, Mark, and myself. Together, we represent a lot of experience in clinical psychology, education, leadership. Paul is a rabbinical administrator at a large.
That need to project is still here.
Thank you.
So, something about our four groups. First small group had more senior professionals, psychiatrists, clinical psychologists, social workers, a little more tabu-wise. The second year, and we're going to show you a little bit of data about each group, we had more junior professionals and a few novices, a number of people who were just beginning in the master's program. So we see the issue of composition coming up. Group one. 30-day group, two male consultants, obviously. But I'll draw your attention to the total number of posts. 500 posts. That means that in a month there were 505 contributions. Some of those are sentences, short utterances, some of those are long paragraphs.
And I want to point out so that you're holding in your head here also.
Great, we can hear you.
Oh, I'm
this
loud.
Is really good.
Oh, it's because years of being a high school teacher.
Great, thank you.
But what happened, this is the group that had a lot of professionals who also had a lot of experience. So that kind of is an equalizing factor. So I think that's also significant because you're going to see some other differences that happen when people aren't as tabby-wise experienced. And, and the group is very mixed. Okay. But I want to point out here, there were three non-participants. And what happens is you just don't know what they're doing.
Lurkers?
They could lurk. They could, they may just decide to totally drop out. They don't always identify what their non-participatory mode is.
But is there a way to know whether they are even there?
Logged in?
That is, looking at, is that trackable?
Yes. Yes, it is. That's available unless they didn't sign on. Now, this is early in our experience. This is the second group. As we move into the later groups, we have done more with the entry boundary and with the exit boundary. At this stage, they came on simply registering for a training event online through CIBC with an explanation, and as they would for other training events. As we move on, we've made the entry boundary a little more complicated, a little more not fully screening, but we start... The one we did this year, we had phone conversations with people ahead of time, and we did review with them of their motivation and interest.
And the difference between an inactive and a non-participant?
Very few posts. They're present, but they're
two posts.
Yeah, maybe, and they almost let you know they're observers. And so it doesn't have the same feeling in terms of the irrational. It just doesn't. But, those definitions, too, might actually be formed at some point when we do make this more technical in terms of how we manage the data. Because when we did this, I was thinking about the fact that these actually need definitions, in terms of what does that mean versus what does this mean. Right now, it's loosey-goosey.
So this was group one. Group two. Shorter group. This group had the novices. We had people who were beginning students in master's programs. And at that point, we hadn't done anything with screening or really composing a group. In group relations, we don't think of composing a group. But we do in terms of what the content, what the themes are, and what We do ask people to submit a letter. We have some information face-to-face online. At this point, the information we had was that they were beginning, at least three or four were beginning master students, and only several who didn't have the level of TEBI experience. So what we see is a less developed conference, just as we would see a less developed face-to-face group.
And so you're actually asking them for gender, and they may not be asking them for sexual orientation, but
at this point we have done no screening or no, the pre-conference body was managed very differently. Now we're managing it more conscientiously. The first couple conferences were managed by self-authorization. People pay their money, they express an interest, and they put down some identifiers themselves. And then in the course of the conference, these other identifiers come up.
Okay.
How much do they pay?
$175.
For 20 versus 30 days?
Well, it's, yeah.
To explain this one, and this was a learning experience, this group fell in March, and as it turned out, many of them were in college. Some were may have been instructors, professors. Some may have been students, mostly older students. I don't recall anybody in this group being real young. But the problem was that it was spring break. And when people were on break, they literally put themselves on break. And so pretty soon, you couldn't tell whether someone was just on break or inactive or non-participatory. So what we learned was you cannot hold this at a time when people are vacationing, where, you know, there's typical times people are not at home and they don't access their computer regularly. So now, granted, younger people tend to, and now it's attached to your phone, and there's all different kinds of things. But at any rate, that was the downfall of this conference.
Learning as we go.
Is it okay to ask questions?
Yeah.
Because one thing that I guess I'm sitting here imagining the similarities and differences, some of its language, but I was suddenly wondering, well, is there any contact online or offline between the staff, the consultants, or not?
Good question. So that's again another variable, along with managing the boundary and composition of who's in, who's out, is managing the staff.
That is online, offline, outside of the actual group.
So that is varied from group to group. So I think in the first few groups, there was no contact. There was very little, you know, very little kind of initiation or whatever. In the last group that we just did, John actually called each participant and had a conversation with them about what it meant to be part of the group, which, you know, we think made a huge difference in terms of what it did was it increased, I think you said it increased participation and it increased the level and the value of participation.
Let's get to that. That's great.
Okay. But to the point of the question, both with managing membership and managing staff, yes, we are now doing, we had at least five online, on phone conferences with the staff training.
Why did you have them on the phone?
Because
why did you not have a chat room or a...
Well, that's another,
staff,
that is another
staff,
whole thing.
Staff,
whatever. Well, that's, we have done that, and Jeffrey will tell you that's how Jeffrey's done with his training. So we've experimented with both. With these small groups, we did phone. So this group, as you see, more posts, a higher percentage of male contribution in terms of posting.
Well, and I think what's interesting here is there are only two males and six females, but you can see that the amount of posting is pretty close. And if you were to divide it by, you know, by the number of males versus females, you can literally see that each male represents 30% of the contributions. Okay, where if you divide the females, and there are six of them, you can see that each female, if it were equal, And I didn't do mean, median, mode, or any of those kind of things. But that's the educator in me that would have gone crazy with data. But that is, would be 6% to 7%, I should say, close to 7. But that's still a big difference.
So do you comment on these sorts of things
as
it is going along?
Oh, yes.
If you notice them.
If you notice
them. In the moment or in the time. So, and if you don't, then you have to think about why.
Do you have a hypothesis about this disparity?
No, we not. We'll keep going on and exploring that. And we welcome you to be part of that exploration. But I think the thing to hold in your head here about the asynchronous is sort of the rhythm or the routine. Some people post 3-4 times a day. They get up in the morning, first thing they do is post. Maybe they brush their teeth. I don't know. I had a fantasy about how people did this. And then there are other people that do it when they get home from work, before dinner, or before they go to bed. And so there was differences in terms of rhythm, a posting rhythm, and differences based on who was in an office and readily had technology access. Or could access technology that was not work-related, okay? So some of that is feeding into this, too. But there definitely is a rhythm for some people when they post 3-4 times a day. And it is close to teeth brushing. I mean, for some of them, it's like constant.
Or some are late-night posters.
Yes, like middle of the night.
Picture is chosen to represent the theme of the conference. You can see the bull elephant, you can see the one female in the distance. And in this conference that we just finished, you can see that, again, three males had a large number of posts.
Yes.
Is there anything that reminds people to post, or everybody has to proactively go and post? Only proactive?
No. There's no alarm, unless they're setting one themselves.
No, not part of the system.
No. Oh, no.
There's somebody who came in 10 days late who forgot that he had signed up and paid for the conference.
Actually, it was 20 days.
20 days late.
20 days late. And so this particular...
Well, you'll see the impact.
The story of this small group we're going to develop, so you can...
Well, this isn't the last one. This is the one before last.
No, right? This is ours.
This is ours.
Okay.
But
here's
split
the
it.
Elves.
And in the background there, those are the females. According to our fantasy. We couldn't quite tell the size of the antlers, but...
Pretty big.
But you can see the number of posts, and actually we didn't do a qualitative analysis of this in terms of the number of words in the post, but the men were verbose, commanding, controlling. But the short story of the group is that for 20 days we had a constructive forming group.
Well, you'll see that data if you click to the next slide. It's the first 20 days. See?
So this is the first 20 days. And that... the males had 47% and the females 53%. And the feeling was typical small group, thoughtful interchanges, explorations, pairings, separations, subgroupings, working with the consultants reasonably well.
And the next one?
And we introduced someone.
Well, somebody came on.
Okay.
Who has actually been experienced online person who has a little different agenda, much as could come in any face-to-face conference. But he came in late. He had paid his money. He had apologized and said I've been preoccupied with family members, and then he came on and posted really quite dramatically. And the prior two males and this male formed a subgroup. Now, during the life of this, as staff, what we experience, see before us in the text, is that the females are commenting less, the pairing is different, the men are dominating space in their rival. And we can talk to that process. But it's not what we get done with the experience, and we look at the post and look at the transcript, we see, and we can actually count the posts, that we see this dramatic experience that Paul and Laura will comment on of the three males really dominating airtime in spite of our consultation, or not working with us, but really envy, competition with myself as a director. Another, this was the first small group that we had a director. The one before was composed of Lynn and I was the senior consultant, and she was the consultant. On this one, I am the director of this event. Lynn is the co-consultant, and we have two. So the roles of authority are a little different in this one. And as it evolves, the three men, highly credentialed psychiatrists and clinical psychologists, are really battering and competing.
So why did you change the staff role to introduce
the
director?
The view... My view and my leadership role was that we need to, as we study this, we see things that we can work with. One is that we can work with differential levels of experience of staff, and also we could, you know, we had some new ideas that you'll see in another slide about managing the event differently, having a more, as we know, in face-to-face work, authority reflects dramatically on the process. So we wanted to kind of complexify our training and our training mission, and really expand the small group so that we would be better able to utilize it. Part of that meant we needed to put somebody in authority more than just having a senior consultant and a junior consultant.
However, your point is well taken in that it may have contributed to the number of male posts in terms of how male authority was viewed. And it is going to be important to keep some things constant if you want to examine them in a container where you can compare your data more readily. But I think what's important to note here is that of the females, three of the five said that on any given day they were going to drop out. They all gave a date and a time. They were going to dismiss themselves. They didn't, as it turned out. One went away for a friend who was ailing. Go ahead, Paul.
Well, I was just going to say, I think all of that happened after the shift in 20 days, that suddenly all the dynamics changed. And it says something about the power of the individual to affect the group, I guess, but it also has something to do, I mean, it may have additional impacts in terms of what can happen in the online environment that may make it more vulnerable to such influence. Because somebody can give one post after another, after another, after another, after another. And if you get 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 posts from the same person, one after the other, it can be experienced, I think, as really battering in a very, even though it's asynchronous and you may be seeing that phenomena a day or 2 days later. It has a context, you feel it in the moment, even though it may have happened yesterday. And maybe other things have happened in between, so that there's a conversation that goes on, but that conversation that went on could be lost for the person coming in and being emotionally impacted by the 5, 6, 7 posts, and it can drown out subsequent things, and everything that gets compressed into the moment you're reading, even though they happened over a period of days.
Was the empty chair, the member who wasn't present, were the other members aware?
Was consulted to regularly, that we didn't know that he wasn't online. We wondered why he was being silent. So at least two or three consultations had to do with our two or three members who are yet to join.
And there was another woman who joined a little late. And John requested permission from the group for her joining. She did have her conference with John, if I recall.
Right.
You may go ahead if you want to give the details on that. But it was interesting because everybody didn't just go, it's this day, it's this time, we're all on. She was staggered. but not staggered by 20 days.
Have you experimented with really long, I don't know, 6-month conferences, something like that?
It's funny you say that.
Jeffrey will tell you about his very large group experience in his conference, but we have been discussing different designs, like 2 months or 4 months, much, and as Lynn pointed out, much like the academic calendar. People come on and they want to learn. Now, this has to do, again, with how we view group relations. Are we really offering unconscious experience similar to a face-to-face conference, or are we offering more of an academic model of people coming in and learning how to do this? So we have people expressing an interest in that.
See, I think you could almost have it continuous. I can see the advantage in that. I mean, if you look at Facebook and you look at some other things, but what has to be established is the parameters. And it's very hard to configure something in cyberspace and trust that that is, in fact, the parameters that people are operating under. Now, and you can't do that any more than you're in a room face-to-face. You aren't totally in control of that. But there is more control. But I have to tell you, when this was all going on, like Paul said, the computer, when you start to walk up to it and you realize that as a consultant, at least I'll speak to this, sometimes the amount of time I would have to spend going back, rereading, trying to create the context for that post within that time prior to the post that went before. It could take you quite a bit of time. And there would be times when I would approach my computer and I could feel my trepidation. It was like I was walking in the room. It was just bizarre.
Can you hold just a minute so we can get back on schedule? And we're just going to go ahead and finish our PowerPoint and then Paul and... So... This is more about the unique membership in Group 4, and you can see, again, by the end of the conference, the three males' participation was done.
I don't think that one should be in there. Missed it. I should have erased that, and that should have been a delete. Sorry.
In summary, asynchronous timing, new technology, this business of learning in cyberspace without face-to-face really is very challenging. You're text-reliant. Your text reliant, and I brought along a text. I can't show you the details because of confidentiality, but I wanted to show you what, if you've any of you sat on the Jeffries, you may see how what it looks like to see these lengthy consultations, but it's all text. So this calls on a different part of the brain. We're exercising new neural pathways or over really working with a different view than we've been evolved over the eons as tribal creatures to look at faces. We know all that from psychology. And emotions can feel amplified. It's a complex analysis. Next slide, please.
Can I ask a question about that one?
Because we really need to get others in, if you could just hold for a minute, Mike.
But Laura's got to talk about that one, about the imaginary images and your other experience, how you conjure up how people are that you're feeling close to and how they look as opposed to what reality is. Because you can't see people doesn't mean you don't create them.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just like bizarre how you find yourself doing this.
As staff, we had the same problem. I hadn't met Laura for, we'd worked together for months on other things, but this finally we met. It's quite an experience. Anyways, to summarize, can contribute to distress, detachment, difficulty with pairing, joining intimacy, some proclivity we think for fight flight. When people do get fear, become afraid online, it can be exaggerated. Some proclivity for polarized thinking. At least we know that concentration and reflection difficulties occur. We always know there's parallel process with staff and membership. Next slide, please. Again, just summarizing, cyberspace is an amplifying container. Recommendations, preparation, and group relations work, online experiences. You just don't come into doing this. As you'll hear from others, it's quite challenging. Time boundaries, new cues. Next slide, please.
Oh, no, that's it.
That's all, I think.
Oh.
Well, no, there's...
we get to the reference section.
Yeah, there's special. This is what the specific recommendations came up with after this.
Which we have, in the last conference, we had pre-staff training, specialized preparation and rehearsal for the consulting team, culture of mentoring, sponsor, administration, structure, staff meetings, pre, during, and post-conference staff meetings. We had a post-conference to review and application groups on phone. So we're managing the membership boundaries and staff boundaries differently, a little more conscientiously. Next slide. Just keep going. Some of the references have to do with cyberspace. And again, there's some very interesting things coming out on the psychology of cyberspace. While we are pioneering with group relations work, other people are doing very interesting studies of the psychology of cyberspace. The road is open. Paul and Laura?
I'll just say a couple of things. One of the interesting things that happened that we haven't mentioned yet is that there were difficulties with time boundaries and confusion caused by different time zones, East Coast, West Coast, Middle Coast, and that infected in the parallel process. That happened to some extent amongst members, but it also badly affected us as a staff, and we actually messed up some of the times rather dramatically. Just a quick thing.
Could you say what?
Yeah, we had a review and application.
Did time boundaries.
We had a review and application group set for a specific time, and half of us understood it, and half of the members understood it at one time, and half of the staff and half of the members thought it was a different time. Was 9 o'clock Central Time or was 9 o'clock Eastern Time?
And then we had to throw daylight savings into that.
Yeah, and it got a little bit crazy. Let me mention just two other things. This conference was all text. Probably Jeffrey and Mark will say something. I participated in their international large group over the summer, and the ability to post videos and music and photographs and designs can explode the experience. In most ways, this online arena is more desiccated because you don't get facial expressions, you don't get the interpersonal. But if you suddenly have an atomic bomb explosion happening in front of you with dramatic music because somebody has decided to really act out their feeling in a different way or in a loving fashion, it becomes something that is really remarkable, transformative, and mind-blowing. Let me leave it at that. I want to make sure other people have a chance to speak. I don't know how to do it.
I want to talk first of all, I want to emphasize, one of the things that I learned from you, Lynn, and that was really, really important in this is the idea of, because you don't have the facial cues, because you don't have everything, the importance of, reading and studying the posting patterns. And, you posted those, and I totally taken for granted that, posting patterns or whatever, oh, yeah, I can recognize them pretty easily. But actually going back and really counting and, the disadvantage of being online can be made up through the advantage of having that record and being able to go back and study the posting patterns. Time boundaries, preparation of online experience, and the self-reflection and the intersubjective matrix, and this is the intersection of emotion and the way that we deal with emotion online, I think, is very different from the way, at least in my experience, from the way that we deal with emotion in an in-person group. I think you and I had the same experience about the member who joined late. We were both very traumatized by this guy who came in and was really aggressive, and I found, after the conference, I looked back and I kind of thought about what I might, where I might have been able to do better, and I realized that I hadn't gotten emotionally involved. I kind of like told myself, oh, I don't really have to get emotionally involved. I can just look at this intellectually. I hadn't really kind of gotten my emotions involved, and So as a result, you can't be an effective consultant if you're sitting back and being like, oh, I can think my way through this. it created a different, after listening to some of the stuff here, it created a slightly different hypothesis than the one I went into. Do you mind if I...
No, I think it's great. Sorry, Mark, I shouldn't speak for you or Jeffrey.
So I have a thing called avoiding the task is doing the task, basically by, I have a friend who says, bears make money, bulls make money, pigs go broke. And, doers get things done, avoiders get things done, and accusers, they go away. But whether you're doing something or whether you're avoiding and doing something else, you tend to get at whatever needs to be gotten at in a conference. In other words, if you're with a small group in a conference and they're talking about the weather or they're talking about the death of their mother, they're really talking about the end of the group and the fear of the death of the group. So what I hypothesized was, because avoiding the task is doing the task is not as available, because a lot of these conversations that would normally happen in a conference outside of outside of the grounds, a lot of this kind of subtle, release wasn't available, that the intensity of stress points would be much greater, and it would create organizational trauma. If you were at Earl Braxton's, I'm kind of pulling from him. And I actually ended up kind of disagreeing with that hypothesis and saying that the avoidance behaviors, while slightly different, you had, similar avoidance behaviors, fight, flight, lots of fighting, and competition around identity. Who's older? I think there's a comment in there.
Oh my God!
I'm older than you are, and I'm wiser than you are, and the old and wise and everything were like huge.
I thought it was kindergarten. I swear to God, it's like I'm in line first, no buts. Did you budge? It was like, oh my God!
Yeah, and some different avoidance behaviors, which were around, we need to get back to basics. This is too confusing for me. We need to get back to so who's online? How many people are there online? I don't really understand. Or, what about, let's all show up at the same time. Let's figure out when to show up and when to make posts. And what I joked with you about basic assumption technology, the technology doesn't work and that's why I can't make an effective post,
Yeah,
It led me to kind of look at this and go, well, yeah, if we look at the idea of avoiding the task as doing the task, then these are all kind of underlying feelings of incompetence, feeling totally incompetent and totally lost, and just feeling really just incompetent and lost, that way. And so I kind of disagree with my original hypothesis that avoidance behaviors as a way of getting to the main issue do exist online, and they exist just as strongly and just as well. Mm-hmm. But I would say, going back to Earl's point where, he says, well, if you have a traumatized organization, what you have to do is acknowledge the feelings and acknowledge the trauma and acknowledge the pain. And except for, I think, your post in the beginning, we didn't do as good a job about, because at least I didn't, I was disengaged and I don't want to deal with this, but you did it very well. You made a post in the very beginning saying, I'm really frustrated because I can't get online, because I can't figure out how the system works, I can't figure out how to sign up. And, there were all these nice posts, oh, my name is blah, 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 and my name is blah, blah, and all of a sudden she posts that, and then there's a flurry of, I'm so angry, blah, blah, blah. I think what would come out of it is that it's not that online, you're losing something or you're losing, facial expressions, but the idea of the emotion and the physical and the body and the things you feel in the body, feeling along the edge, is one of the kind of competencies as a consultant, is really an important thing to think about, an important thing to be aware of, mm-hmm. when you're online, because it's so easy to lose that emotion.
Mark and Jeffrey, would you comment on, as the originators of the original online small group? And
that?
Sure. I'll just say it two, three brief things. One was that I was glad to work with Jeffrey in the first one, and that I was asked probably, my fantasy is that I was really willing to try new things, but was fairly skeptical. And it had to do with the unboundedness of the experience and how terrifying and how unanalogous I thought it might be to actual face-to-face group relations work. When we did this presentation at the last semester, I tried to talk about reconfiguring a model that's helpful for me for navigating cyber non-face-to-face, and it had to do with Lacan's forming knot and working within the real, which I think that cyber phenomena doesn't really fit so well within the symbolic or the imaginary process. There's something going on because of the unbounded nature of it and the atypical nature of it compared to face-to-face relationships. I've given up on that idea, but I've not given up, but put it on hold. And what I have returned to is that obviously we're doing so much virtually, from Facebook to meetings to Skype to shared office laptops and meetings and things like that, that group relations really should be studying it. I was thinking about Sunny's comments about how we're not in the business of inquiry and scholarship these days. This would be something that we could be working with and contributing to the psychosocial community about, because so much crazy activity, dysfunctional activity, and wonderful functional activity is going on because of our technological breakthroughs. I'm a theory-driven person. I'm a model-driven person. It helps me guide through things when I'm really uncertain. The three things that I think, having heard this presentation before and now, the three things I wanted to highlight as kind of a classical group relation person is that the basic assumption massification probably needs to be re-understood given the oceanic-like social of the online milieu. That idea is probably very applicable still, but just needs to be slightly reconfigured because it's happening at such a broad level in cyberspace. I think the defense of isolation and avoidance, we talked about the lurker, the anonymity, people posting as two people, so on and so forth, some of those classical ideas have to be revisited given the fact that they can be done so flourishly, so over the top, so technically differently on a online platform. And last but not least, I'm just very interested in the frame, because we create an experiential learning laboratory in group relations work. Each of these incarnations and iterations have been an attempt to create more of a bounded laboratory, because when we started, it was a little bit unbounded, very effective and interesting, but not quite so bounded.
I guess I'd like to combine my comments about the online small group and then move into the large group and conference work online. For me, starting with the small group made sense. It seems to be that we get our feet wet when we're doing face-to-face work. I became interested in group relations online about 15 years ago when I first became a participant in online communication. And it has been a work in progress. And it's been important to me, and I'm very grateful to have now colleagues in Cisco and out of Cisco who've participated in online experiences. From my point of view, the only way to believe that there is anything about group relations in a virtual environment, the only way to find that out is to be there and make a decision for yourself as to whether it seems like it's actually there. And doing it in a small group may be a gentler way to jump in, especially if you're jumping in as a consultant. I'm not particularly a computer person. I learned with as much difficulty as anybody, even things like how to cut and paste. So I don't claim a lot of technical expertise. I've had the benefit of
support from people who had more experience than me in the technical aspects. So I'd like to say a little bit about that. The platform that the work that you've seen was done is done on a website, scibc.com, that's owned by a psychologist who had one or two experiences in group relations. His specialty in doing this website is to put on what would be more usual didactic training, and it was an innovation for that particular website to do anything experiential. So we put that in to that, starting with the first time that Mark and I co-consulted to an online small group. There are limitations to doing it on somebody else's website, and there are advantages to moving it into your own website. So one of the things that I did after the work on SciBC.com technically is set up a website with a different bulletin board which had the different potentials that Paul was referring to. So I'm not sure if on SciBC.com you can put in a link that you can click on the link and get to like YouTube or something like that, or to play music off of the can you do that on SciBC.com? I forget.
You know, nobody tried it, and I didn't want to, as a consultant, introduce it.
Right.
But I kept waiting for somebody to kind of drop this in, and I don't know whether we're even aware of the capabilities.
Because people did cut and paste from things like what you're describing.
Right.
But every time people even gave web addresses, you know how they turn into like
a link. Yeah.
That doesn't happen, because I watched people put their addresses in and they did not become links. So I'm assuming no, but therein again lies some of the lack of clarity that exists in an online environment. It just magnifies that of what would go on face to face.
And if there had been somebody who was much more savvy than we are, because I don't know that we represent a particularly technology savvy group, we're here because we're interested in group relations. One of the nice things about having technologically savvy people join the groups is that they educate us then as to what are the potentials for the work. In any case, the software that I'm currently using for the large study group has the potential for putting in links, pictures, all different kinds of material into a post.
It has the impact of the Wizard of Oz going into color from black and white. Suddenly, everything becomes 3D, where it had been black and white and two-dimensional.
Because also we don't own the website, SciBC.com, there's certain information that was not available to us in terms of
demographic
being
online,
being having a sponsoring organization, Cisco, on a host, which is SciBC.com, is different than having Cisco be both the host and the sponsor. So on the website now that I put together with a specific bulletin board, as the administrator of that website, I can actually go on and find out who's been logging on, who's not been logging on. It's available to me, that information.
Wow.
I don't have the particular method to find out how many posts people have made, but I've worked on another website that's owned by another colleague who's not in group relations but has done a fair amount of work online. And his website, actually you can go to a place, even as a member, you can go on and find out how many posts everybody's had. So these kind of technical pieces can be added depending on your technical expertise, which, like I said, I don't pretend to have, but I know enough about it so that I could ask for it if I wanted to design a website. One other technical piece, because the question came up here, what can you do your staff work online? The first virtual large study group that I did, I did not have staff work taking place online. We had pre-conference or pre-event meetings via email and post-event discussion via email. I decided that didn't make any sense, that if we were really going to build an online environment to do group relations, that it made sense for the staff to have the same experience as the members. So for the second virtual large study group, there were two parallel bulletin boards. One bulletin board that staff and members had access to, and another bulletin board that only staff had access to. The staff bulletin board that only staff had access to was open for a month before the event. It was open during the month of the event and another month after the event. for staff work. And just so they to get to what John was talking about in terms of research, if one has those two bulletin boards, one can then have research on what went on in the staff group pre, during, and after, and also research on how that process in the staff, which is now documented because you have it all on a bulletin board, how that may be similar or different to the process that takes place in the event itself among the members.
It's the water cooler. It's like the water cooler.
Yeah.
It is a place. Yeah.
Right. Well, it's like having an ongoing.
More than that.
It's far more than that. Yeah. It's having an ongoing staff meeting while, because ordinarily when we're doing face-to-face work, we have a staff meeting and then we have the event and we have another staff meeting at the other end. It's having an ongoing staff event, an ongoing staff meeting during the event. So there's ways in which we can work that are amplified. That may make up for, or they may compensate in a way for the sense of lack of immediacy in the face-to-face world. You're supposed to have time for questions? I don't want to...
We've got 10 minutes. So.
I have a moment just to say that we are researching these large group events that Jeffrey's conducted. And I want to say also, again, the composition is a major factor. These are very sophisticated international group relations people who are coming on Jeffrey's online experience. So that at that level, there's the interaction is more sophisticated, thoughtful, and creative in some ways. But we are working, and we have a research team that I'm coordinating with a couple Australian graduate students. We're doing a theme analysis. I have some data on that, but we don't really have, let's not go into that now. Just so that you know, what we're doing is spending time working with studying these interesting new group relations events.
So I'd like to say something about the process of organizing an online event. I think that might be of interest. To you all. So the online small study group that we first did, Mark and I, 5 or 6 years ago, we kept that alive in a way by incorporating now what you see as new consultants.
Mark and I did the next year, then, as they passed it. Then Mark left, and then I did.
Right. So we've been gradually incorporating new people into doing this, the online small group. 3 years ago, I did an online group relations conference, which now I recognized, 2020 hindsight, was premature. I did it on somebody else's website, somebody who was very eager to do an online group relations conference and asked me, based on his knowledge of me in terms of my experience in new group relations work, asked me to be the director of a group online group relations conference. We did the conference. The person who invited me, who owns the website, had never been to a group relations conference face-to-face. He wanted to be a consultant in the online group relations conference, and I said, there's two things that have to happen if I'm going to direct the conference, one of which is you can't be a consultant, and the other which is I'm willing to have you be the administrator if and only if you are willing to go to a face-to-face conference. He went to the five-day conference, which I thought was satisfying the condition. I found out later that he left after 4 days because he thought he'd had enough. And then proceeded during the conference in his role as administrator to contact via email members of the conference to invite them to be staff on the next event.
That he was going to do.
Yes, that he was going to do.
Piracy.
Yes. He was also trying to copyright the name, or trademark the name Online Group Relations. He got a very nasty communication from the Tavistock Institute threatening legal action if he attempted to do that. That was a wake-up call for me. I needless to say that if we're going to do online group relations, if we're not managing the boundaries, if we're not taking responsibility for managing the boundaries, it's going to be done by somebody else, and it's going to be done in a way which may not be consistent with our wish to maintain this as an open system. So that's what led me then to take a step back and realize, before we do any online group relations, we need to move more slowly and have a progression from online small group to an online large group, which is how the virtual large study group was born. And I realized that if it was going to be a meaningful experience, that it needed to be authorized by the International Community of Group Relations organizations. So I contacted all 30 or 40 international group relations organizations saying, would you like to participate in co-sponsoring a virtual large study group? And I eventually wound up with six of the major group relations organizations, the Tavistock, ACRI, the Grubb Institute, SESMA, OFEC, and Group Relations Australia. All worked together to co-sponsor the first and the second virtual large study group. And I've been working on having experienced large group consultants be consultants in the virtual large study group. So the first virtual large study group, there was myself, Eliot Aram, Elio Vera, and Bridget Nossel from Australia were the four consultants to the first virtual large study group. Based on the success of that experience, we then launched the second virtual large study group, which was earlier this year in March. And I asked four consultants, and this gets to the question that was asked of John about the role of the director, because there was some wish on my part to have four consultants come on where I would not consult. I would be the director without consulting. And the idea was that I would work with the consultants as a small group in the staff group, and I would be an observer in the event and give space to the other consultants to consult. They did not want that. They were very reluctant. The four consultants at that point were Jeremy Harrell from OFEC, Bridget Nossel came on again from Group Relations Australia, Kathleen Pogue White, dual citizenship from ACRI and the Tavistock, and John Bazalgette from the Grubb Institute were the four consultants who worked with me on the second virtual large study group. They insisted that I be an active consultant, so we had five consultants to that virtual large study group. The virtual large study group, in terms of number, has been probably someplace in between a large study group and a medium-sized group. It's been between 20 and 30 members. Ideally, at some point, I think it would be useful to have a large group which is closer to like 50 or 60. We're getting there. I've also had the experience working with this colleague who's much more technologically sophisticated than me, who's not in ACRI, but he's gone to a number of ACRI functions. I've worked with him in consulting to a large group for the American Group Psychotherapy Association. And that's been informative for me in terms of comparing and contrasting what it's like to do a large study group that has the kind of understanding of process that we have, and doing another kind of large group, which to which I attempt to consult as a group relations person, and with mixed results. I'm not exactly authorized to do that some of the time. At some point, I also believe that it will be useful to move from a large study group to an intergroup event and then to a conference. That's probably 5 to 10 years in the future.
We need to move to close
yes.
the question.
Just a quick comment. I think one of the things that I'm left with on the basis of having been a member in the international group and consultant in training in the small one is to what extent I'm nervous about or concerned about the difficulty for someone coming into such conferences who has not had any group relations experience. Because some of the people in our group really never, it's so difficult to contend with this alternative way of viewing groups and yourself and so forth, even in the face-to-face, that I think becomes magnified in the online experience. And so I think there are possibilities for even greater confusion and despair, and it's easier to drop out of online experience than when you've already been committed to, and you are having interactions with people between the sessions where they nurture one another and help them and share their own confusion outside of the experiential thing. So I think I wonder whether, to what extent we can bring people totally from the outside into these kinds of experiences and have them find it to be a meaningful and useful experience.
And so therefore that's why in this last year we had an entry boundary that was a little different. So we know who's coming in and what their background is. Different than the large group where we have a sophisticated consumer. But let's see what questions you have. Enrique.
In a face-to-face conference, we tend to react to the emotions. The emotions get evoked by what happens there. Mm-hmm. In this virtual realm, the emotions of the people who came from work and let me go to my virtual, I mean, it can make it a lot more real. I'm just thinking, and I was wondering if you have done some research or if you have information about that.
I actually thought about the fact that when I talked about that rhythm and the fact of how it's happening, the fact that people were going to work carrying their stress or tension with them and then sitting down. It's not like you don't bring other things into a face-to-face, but there is a reclusiveness to that environment that does act as a filter, okay? There is no filter in online, and I believe that that is, in fact, when Laura was addressing the intensity, that is, in fact, one of the contributors to the intensity. You walk in, as I said, I could feel it when I would come in. You walk in, you're carrying that from wherever you've come, and it is already a somewhat intense environment. Bingo, it gets magnified. And so I think you're quite right in terms of the contributing ongoing effect of bringing the outside in.
And it can be more powerful experience and more learning experience because
you're
it's happening with reality. It's
yes.
Not I need to translate that weird thing that I did somewhere else to my reality.
Well,
it's
the transfer and application are much greater, so they intensify the learning process because of transfer and application. Exactly.
Two more questions. Norman, you had one.
I think there are two related things. I think they're related. One is casualties. And the other is containment. That in the, I think what I hear you referencing is that in the face-to-face, there are sort of some multiple outer layers of containment. The members talk to each other outside. They talk to each other in the hallway. They talk to each other in the street. Ways of processing and transforming the experience, including turning potential casualty into learning opportunities. So you have me sort of thinking, I'm not sure where it goes, about how that aspect of human experience, of maintaining our boundedness and using it, how it shows up in the online world, and the potentials for conference design around that. Your phone contact, I think, represents one way of addressing it.
In our small group, again, going forward, we will have more information and contact up front because we want to be sure that we have people coming in and have some understanding of what you're getting into.
But Norman, we did consult outside the group.
I'd like to respond to that as well. I also want to point out that Norman and I have co-authored a paper on psychoanalysis in cyberspace. It's going to be in Psychoanalytic Inquiry, I believe.
Yeah.
So this is going on broadly, where we've got good company. The members, if we don't institute that for them, the members are quite able to do that amongst themselves, as has happened in the virtual life study group both times. One of the times, the member lounge, because they created their own member lounge, we didn't give them one, they created a Facebook page specifically for members of the virtual life study group where they would go and have conversations amongst themselves and then eventually got reported back in the virtual large study group, which then ignited a fierce debate amongst the members as to whether those people who were on the Facebook page were somehow acting out or exporting something which really belonged in the virtual large study group. So the need for, the impulse for outside communication or other kinds of support, conversations in the hallway, is there as much in cyberspace as it is in our face-to-face conferences.
We need to close, but Ken had a question.
Well, what I'm realizing is I have so many questions.
Good.
That really
let's set up a Facebook page.
The point of that is that I'm really very grateful to you all for doing this, because it seems to me that you are exploring something that we damn well ought to be exploring, you know. And so you have your questions, and you're learning things, and you're learning new questions to ask as you go along. So in a sense, I can sort of have just not ask my questions because you're doing it, right? Because you're engaged with that. So I really just want to make that sort of point. I think it's terribly important that people who are knowledgeable about group relations and group process are really engaged with this. As you're not allowing the psychopathic entrepreneurs to capture the field. The second point, I think there's a subtext in the presentation, how involving technology is going to affect all of these things. You know, your ability to know now who's lurking as opposed to who's not there. Eventually, and I'd be able to post things. I think eventually you'll be able to see people, right? You know, be able to do some video, you know, Skyping, so to speak, you know, in this respect, and sort of see how that develops. So it'll become, as you're learning, it's changing, in a sense, so it'll never be what it was, and you know, the knowledge will become obsolete, but then there'll be new things to learn. So it's very exciting. I want to thank you very much.
And as a convener, I would like to say thank you also very much. And as one of my colleagues, no longer with us, but she used to always say, I think it's really applicable here to be continued.